I had a smarter than me dude at least tell me one time that two things in your church should be polarizing, your gospel and your vision. And I'm not arguing that. I 100% agree with that logic.
Welcome to the Eyes on Jesus podcast with Drew and Tim, two pastors discussing practical details about life, leadership, parenting, and being more centered around Jesus first. The goal of this show is to help you keep your eyes on Jesus through the busyness of life and clutter of your schedules. Now, join us for the conversation.
Hey, welcome to the Eyes on Jesus podcast with Drew and Tim, and we have a special guest today. Our guest today has served, helped launch, and partnered with some of the largest churches in the world. He now helps leaders build scalable success and trains thinking for innovators and those trying to set new standards in ministry. Now, personally, I like the way he thinks, and I like the way he challenges me to think. And I'm thankful for the way that he leads and inspires those around him to raise the bar. So this guest is also a husband, a father, and a friend. Welcome to the podcast, Stephen Webb. So glad you're here, man.
Man, I love that. I'm gonna take that whole clip, play it every
right?
time. Like, get up. Hey kids,
that's it.
This is what we're gonna
do. That's it. Just post it on your mainstay website and be like, this is what everyone thinks about me. That's all. Do you remember the first time we met? Do you remember?
I know where and when and all that, but the first time, I don't know. I mean, you got a detailed story in mind right here. What?
So check this out. I was thinking about this since you were coming on as a guest. So the first time we met, I was coming in to interview at Elevation. Mm-hmm. That was back when we were doing like the whole weekend, right? Like you come in for the whole weekend, right? And I signed up and came in through LB, and we were talking about an associate campus pastor role. Well, in the period of time, now you're like, yeah, I think I remember.
Yeah,
now, in the period of time from when I applied, when I talked to LB, and when I arrived, Elevation had done away with the associate campus pastor role. And that had then moved to guest experience. So Tim, check this out. I'm walking in with my wife. It's my first time ever being at Elevation. It's my, like at this campus, Matthew's campus. First time ever like walking into this kind of situation. And Schweb is handing out the little lanyards you put over your thing. And he hands me one that says guest experience director. And I looked at him and I said, I thought it was ACP. And he goes, are titles important to you? And I was like,
I love this.
Well, when they're the wrong ones, yeah. when they're the wrong titles, they're right. important to me. So I immediately was like, who is this guy? Why is he giving me stuff right out of the gate? I'm just trying to make sure it's all good. And he's like, just don't worry about it. Just wear this one. And I'm like, what is happening, dude? And like, that was literally my first experience with you, man.
That blesses me. I do remember that, how you say that, because that's not the first and only time I've ever done that. I've not always said it the same way, but here's how I asked a friend this. He's a good friend of mine to this day. He's actually a campus pastor down in Orlando. But he wanted to be something else. And before he was campus pastor, I made him be a kids director. And he didn't have kids. He's not that guy, but he became one of the best. And I asked him, he went back and forth on the, I want to do this and I want to do that. And then I said, listen, what can you do as a campus pastor? You just can't do as a kids director. And it was back to that sort of like, title's important to you? And he's like, right. Dang. He thought about it. He really did. And he's like, man, nothing. I don't know. Like leading people, giving vision, like mobilizing volunteers, raising people up, you know, like what can you do? You get budget, you get to spend. I mean, I don't know what else you want to do. And so I love it. Cause I kind of might have a history, a trend that I do. I'll just call it out. But hey, it happened to me too.
It's solid, man. It's solid. I was like, I want to make sure I'm taken to the right room. Like there's five rooms up here. I was so confused. And I got my wife looking at me like, so I guess we're just gonna, I'm like, babe, we're here. Like we're going, we're all in. Here we go. So man, it's been crazy. And that was several years ago. And not only did I have the blessing of working alongside you and also watching you from a distance in a couple of things, but now I get to see all these new things that you're up to. You've now kind of moved away from working specifically at a church. You're now supporting churches all across the globe. kind of bring our listeners in and give me some insight to like what led you in that direction and what you felt like God was really calling you to in that.
Cool. Well, I didn't thank you first for bringing me on. Let me have a conversation. This is cool. I've been looking forward to it. And I'm glad to see you're totally fine after that tragedy that you had to go through.
I had to go to a lot of therapy.
I didn't even share my story. The first time I met him, that was like 10 minutes ago, and it changed my life.
Absolutely. And that's what he does.
Your face is screaming that.
Yeah.
Right. That's what he does for sure.
I digress.
No, but I appreciate bringing me on this school. It's a good conversation. I'm actually going to look forward to it for a while. I know we talked about this for a long time, man.
We have.
I mean, I've been in vocational ministry for 20 some years, like on a church staff job in some way. You know, my parents are ministry, grandparents, aunts, uncle, cousins. My brother's a worship pastor at Life Church. It's kind of like in the blood, so to speak, although I never really wanted to do that. I was the last to kind of come on board with that sort of mindset. So I did all that. Not saying I arrived or anything like that, but I'd kind of gone through those journeys. And then a couple of years ago, I actually used the word graduate. I would say I graduated Elevation Church. I didn't quit staff. I finished. I feel like a lot of people need to finish. And they don't. Or a lot of people need to graduate and move on and not be 30 years old walking by high school halls. And I think there's some version of that in ministry as well. But we just felt like, man, we finished. We graduated. And I've helped a lot of people since do that, not just from Elevation, but elsewhere, like changing their mindset. So anyway, we did that. A little key thing I like to always tell everybody, but we stayed at the church for another year. I was a tithing, tending, serving, coaching kind of guy at the church for another year. So it's funny how people can leave staff and then they have to get jumped out of the gang and all that kind of stuff.
Of course.
So we stayed for another year, but then we transitioned from there in Orlando at the time. Now we live in Texas, back where we're from. We're from Texas. We're in a new town now, but we're from Texas. So we moved. That's the only reason we don't currently still go to Elevation in that case. But anyway, when we jumped out of staff, I had no plans. Didn't know what I wanted to do because we weren't running to anything and we weren't leaving something. We had just graduated. It's like, man, I'm going to go to college. We're going to play sports. What are we going to do? It's that same sort of mindset. Right. You might own a 17, 18, 19 years old, right? And it really was that because we had really put our money where our mouth is and said, no. We didn't go subversively line everything up and make our lives better. And then, oh, by the way, the Lord is leading us away. I hate that crap so much. I got rants on that. Anyway, so we really didn't know. And so we were just open. But literally, and this is so funny, literally, I had sent an email, my resignation letter, if you will. It was conversation involved. I don't recommend just blasting an email, but that's his context. I lived in Orlando. My bosses are in Charlotte, yada, yada. So anyway, but I had gone through that. But I literally hit send officially on the email. And I kid you not, I'm walking into it, a lunch. A friend of a friend said, hey, man, will you come over and have lunch with us and just help us out with something in Orlando? And just had some barbecue there. And the guy says, by the way, man, you happen to do any consulting, man? You available for that kind of thing? And I was like, man, I'm suddenly pretty available. It was literally as I hit send on the name. I'm not even kidding you. And it was like that God week. He's like, I got you. It's fine. Now, consulting or coaching, those are different things. And so I would claim to be both of those. That was never a goal. Matter of fact, I was kind of anti that for a long time. And depending on where you land on that spectrum, I might be anti people that do that. But at Elevation, and you probably know this, you know, we just saw thousands of people travel the world to come learn what we did. You know, some of them are tourists. They just want to meet the man or something like that, you know, but for the genuine people, I was just like, we didn't have a team that did that. We weren't like the conference church. Right. So people would they would somehow kind of filter through my view. I was not in a specific role where I had to be dedicated to a job on a Sunday. So I was flexible to do that. So I had already kind of coached and consulted for years. And so it's kind of a natural muscle, if you will, that it kind of developed. And so I just, on so many levels, kind of stumbled into it. And then God kept providing, I don't know, contacts, doors, people started writing checks. Oh, that's weird. It took me 6 months. I have a friend that's a kind of a high level business developer guy, Christian worldview guy, Christian guy, former pastor, but he's in business school now for years. And he's the one that talked me into it. He's like, bro, stop wasting your life. Stop dragging your feet. Make this a business. Get official, focus, drive it something. And so technically for 3 years, I've been doing that. 3.5 years since I graduated Elevation. And I've just been full-time coaching and consulting. Again, those are different things. And I have no plans to build an empire. I don't have employees. I don't want to have employees. I don't know that I will or won't go back into full-time ministry. I don't know that I won't work at Chick-fil-A in 3 weeks. That's literally on my list of things I end up doing. So it's one of those, like, I'm just taking steps. And my family's the same way. We're just like, hey, man, God's got us. We've always kind of lived in this Matthew 6:33 thing, and he'll provide the bills on the back end of our advancement of the kingdom. I have a tattoo for Matthew 6:33. Like, that's just kind of been our vibe, which is not the same thing as being flippant, but that really is kind of where we are. So right now I'm in another city 3 hours from my house because I did some consulting this weekend. And as long as people call me and they want to learn and stretch and grow and can take a punch in the face because they want to get better, well, then I'll be the guy to do that with them.
That's awesome. And I've really enjoyed watching you grow that. I know when you you talked about 3.5 years ago, I kind of saw what you were doing on Instagram and saw how you were really starting to develop some things on TikTok, and to see your passion stay consistent, but your involvement in an engagement with your followers and with what people are going through, and even being able to take like feedback in how to direct your content, like putting everybody on chats and putting them in a DM group and going, hey, would you guys like to hear about this? Would you guys like to hear about this? You're really attempting to keep your pulse on what's going on. And, you know, in ministry, that can mean so many things for so many different people, depending on where they live and what kind of church they're really trying to build. So I've loved watching that. Now, I have to dive in a little bit, though, on something you said. Yeah. So you mentioned you graduated. You feel like you finished, like you ran the race, and that's awesome. And I love that. We obviously see a really big turnover trend in churches, not just right now, but it's been rolling for several years.
Yeah.
Like, what do you think contributes to that? What do you think that is? Because, you know, you mentioned the whole like God's calling me away or God's moving me on. And you know, that is something that's leveraged and used quite a bit. It's certainly like, speak to that. What are you, what are you seeing, and really help our listeners understand what you mean when you say it's important to run the race and graduate?
Yeah. You know, I feel like what you're asking is great. And I feel like there's more than two or three buckets, but we all try to put everything in a bucket. You know, like that person's running to something, that person's running from something, that person's fearful. And that's the reason people quit. And then we title it the Great Resignation and we blame COVID for that or something. You know, it's these clean buckets. And I don't know if there is always that sort of thing. The word graduation came to me after I graduated. But I did say in my resignation letter, hey, I finished. I was hired. So my story real quick is I was hired at Elevation to build. I was the builder and fixer. If it needed to be built or fixed at Elevation in any way, not just a building or something. And again, I'm glad we're on this call because you can attest to this. I was the guy that they called for that. So I built a lot of the campuses, built the teams, built the campus pastors, sure there's a team of us, by the way. I'm not taking all credit for that. But basically, I was a builder for that.
No, it was so, just you. No, I, it's going to...
No, no. Bernie just texted me and said, handle the next 17 campuses, bro. It's going to be great. No, so I was a builder. And just kind of a funny little tweetable statement was, I was a builder who became a bureaucrat. I built things and now I had to hold them all. And now I went from being a pioneer and a frontiersman. And that's actually what we used to call it, the frontier. I don't know if you're aware of that. We used to call those campuses outside of Charlotte the frontier. Very different mindset of just doing a pop-up franchise down the street in Charlotte. And so because of that, now I'm having to be a bureaucrat in meetings to like appease everybody and be like, here's what we should be doing. And all. And that's just not my style. It's not what I'm made to do. And I was very aware of just the trend, and not the church trend, but just I'm talking about Elevation specifically, of just how we weren't building anymore in the same way to the same extent. It's not a bad thing, but I had just noticed, it's fine. I'm a builder. You're not building anything. Call me back. And they literally said that. Call me when you want me to build something again. I'm not running away from the church. I finished this particular, you know, kind of endeavor, assignment, whatever. All that to say, I don't know that everybody else has that clarity. I wish they did. They want to be on staff at a church, and that's what they call it. I'm on staff at a church. The end. I want to be a pastor. Define to me, what is a pastor? Well, you know, Sweb, it's like a speaker. Oh, so it's a speaker. Well, you know, like a counselor. So it's a counselor. Because I don't find that in the Bible. So which one is it? Well, you know, I mean, like we just kind of lead people. Well, that's a dad. Like we don't have to be a paid staff member for that. You know what I mean? So, but if, and I know it sounds obnoxious, but I'm intentionally obnoxious. So I'm driving people to clarity, but people don't want to work that hard on clarity. They just want to get in, kind of situate in a seat, get the direct deposit, which is what they're addicted to, and call it ministry. And I think that's why people eventually hit some sort of wall or a punch in the face with some sort of reality or apathy for that matter. And they eventually quit or just dissolve into oblivion. So that's another kind of bucket, if you will, of what I'm talking about. So all that to say, I do think because of the chaos of COVID and some other things, just that season of chaos over the last, let's call it 3-4 years, even leading into the COVID season, I just feel like there's a little bit more of a shaking. What I have perceived, though, that what COVID did, and there's plenty of books written about it now, is COVID wasn't an instigator, it was an accelerator, right? If your church sucked, it sucked worse than COVID. If your church was great, it was better in COVID. Yeah. A lot of churches giving went up during COVID, right? Because they had established and cultivated generosity ahead of time, and now they could harvest, you know? So there's an accelerator where I feel like I've seen a turnover. Elevation's on the books on that one too. They've had a lot of turnover as well. Is I feel like it was not a change of conviction, but an absence of conviction. I feel like a lot of people that I know, multiple churches, even other organizations for that matter, it's like, hey, this thing happened in the world. And then, of course, it was expressed uniquely in different industries, whatever. And therefore, it exposed to me that what I thought we were doing, fighting for, building, achieving, whatever, is not really, apparently, we're not doing that. Apparently, right. We changed our convictions based on demographics or racial conversations or budgets or whatever. But I thought you said we were storming hell with a water pistol, and now we're letting that guy do whatever he wants because he is X, Y, or Z. And I feel like that's the case. So people weren't running from evil. They weren't running from moral failure and those kind of things. They weren't running to or from more money. They were running from, I don't know what the heck we're doing. I might as well go put my, you know, plant my flag in the ground where I can be intentional about my future. And I can just tell you way too many stories of people that are in that vein. I just happened to come to that conclusion aside from the COVID chaos, because I had seen it ahead of time. That's actually what took me to Orlando pre-COVID. But I feel like that's what it is. It's the absence of conviction or drive or focus on something, and they're just kind of floating. And you hit this sort of, oh, kids are grown now, or I've got enough money to make now, and I just feel like I want to do something. You know, it used to be called a midlife crisis. Now it's just called 30 or something right. like that. Right. And I feel like for me, I, again, there's a lot of psychological experts. I'm sure there's a pool of experts out there that wants to claim some other big, great resignation source. But just tell you, I'm just telling you, like, I was in this conversation this morning with somebody who transitioned from job to job, and it really came down to, I just felt like we were just aimless and I wanted to do something on purpose.
Yeah, clarity is really important. And I love some of the content you've put out around these Christian terms that we throw around in church. We want you to be in community. And it's like, what does everybody know what that means when you say community? We want to disciple. So I got to share this. I was having a conversation. I totally stole your line the other day. I was meeting with someone and they said, I'm all about discipleship. And I was like, really? And he was like, I'm all about discipleship. I mean, the one thing I want to do more than others, I want to disciple people. And I was like, man, that is awesome. So when you say discipleship, define it. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, you know, like
well, you know,
teaching, like teaching other people. And I went, I think that's teaching.
Yeah, right.
I think
word
I think that's teaching. But that's the thing, right? It's so important, especially and for me it's been so powerful because we are in a building phase. Like I'm a builder. And we started, you know, 2 years ago with 37 people. We're now questioning how many services do we need to have in order to, you know, equate the people that are coming in, which is a great problem to have. But these are the kinds of questions that have allowed us to get there. Because when we say community, we know, like we know what that means. When we say we're discipling people, like we know what we're striving for in those conversations and in those rooms. If not, like you said, then like you're purposeless and you don't really know what you're trying to, the goal you're trying to get to. So that's really valuable and has certainly helped me. I'm going to let Tim get in here at some point, but I do have one more I want to jump to. And then Tim's just like, dude, this is great. Go for it. So you're working with a lot of different churches. I see you have the Pursuit hat on, Russell Johnson, you know, Pursuit Northwest, like big fan up there. They are just rolling and really on the edge of a lot of things right now that are happening with culture and in our world. I'm curious, like, what are you currently seeing from churches just across the board? What's something that you would say, man, this really excites me. Like, I'm really excited about where things are driving. At the same time, what's maybe something that you're like, I'm a little concerned in this area?
Yeah. Well, I got to give you a disclaimer up front. I'm not Chicken Little. And that market is cornered. You know, there's Canadian podcasters and Alabama preachers and everybody in between who wants to be Chicken Little, like, here's what the global church is seeing. Here's 21 ways to be 21 times better than the 21 churches next to you. That's okay. There's a market for that. I'm just not in that market. I'm a blue ocean guy. So that being said, I'm not going to have a prescription for what I'm seeing in the church, but trends that I see based on people that I go visit, and that's a very clarifying point that everybody needs to listen to, is I'm excited what I'm perceiving. Again, I can't say that for millions of churches across everywhere. I love that we're starting to have a little bit more polarization, and I would prefer that. I had a smarter than me dude at least tell me one time that two things in your church should be polarizing, your gospel and your vision. And I'm not arguing that. I 100% agree with that logic. God, Jesus was wickedly divisive and polarizing. Not rude. Polarizing is not the same as rude. Polarizing is not the same as unkind. It's just I think it's just a better word for clarity probably. And which I find is actually coming from a place of confidence too. So anyway, I like that. That's to your point of Russell. I didn't wear that hat for this reason, but maybe I'll get a sponsorship out of those guys. Anyway, but he's relatively polarizing. but not arbitrarily militant. There's a difference. And he's like, this is what we believe. This is how we do church. This is who we, you know, what we preach, how we preach. This is how loud our music's going to be. This is the style of our services. Take it or leave it. It's okay if you don't like it. But he also went further. This is what we believe about politics. Now, he's a 10-year veteran politician, so he speaks a language that has a thicker skin than I'll ever pretend to have. He thinks politics is a sport, and I think it's just, that sounds terrible to me. But that's his style.
No, but you're right. So you're right.
God put him there for that reason. He's good at that. So he decided, oh, no, by the way, we're not shutting down. But that polarization or clarity around vision and calling is what I think, and I think he's actually said this too, largely led to a tremendous numerical growth to the church because people are like, oh, at least I know what they're for. At least I know that they believe what they're, you know, they're smoking what they're selling, because most pastors aren't doing that at all, by the way, going back to your community statement, but they're not in small groups, but they say you got to be in small groups, find your friends. Which one is it, bro? So
right.
I see more of that is my point. It's like, yeah, we just do this. If you don't like it, no offense. We love you. God loves you. Salvation is on God, not us. We're just preaching the gospel. You and the Holy Spirit should have a meeting one day, but we're just gonna preach this way. I like that. I see more of that. And I think some of the Russells, if you will, are giving people that sort of confidence maybe. And I like that. I think some of that might be coming from angst or frustration. People are like fed up and they're like, you know what? Screw it. We're going to do this way. This is how we're going to do church.
Sure.
I'm okay with that. Is it my style all the time? No, I don't want to do church the way some people do church. I don't care. Even in my coaching and consulting, I never prescribe. Here's how what I would do. I actually charge those people a lot more. If they want me to prescribe something, I'm like, well, that's going to cost you a fortune because stupid always costs more. I'm going to always charge dumb people. But what I do is I say, what do you want to do? What's your calling? What's your vision? Go ahead and tell me all the promises you've made to people. And I just simply hold up a mirror and say, well, here's how I'm seeing what you're saying. So that being said, you don't have to agree with all the polarization part. You just, this is what you do. I do think at some point you should probably agree with the polarization side of what Jesus said. I mean, that's kind of how the whole lot works. So there's that. On the negative side, like, what are some things that kind of worry you? I think another thing that's happened, though, and I don't know if this is new, but I just perceive it more. I really don't know if there's any uptick whatsoever in this, is the comparison. I feel like there's still just the, you know what? I got tired of this church because of all the angst we talked about earlier. And then, so I tell you what, I'm going to go start my own thing. But it's not your own thing. You're going to copy from 17 other people after you go to 19 conferences, after you take the support money from 3 different networks and associations to do your own vision that somehow still says finding freedom in it. And you're going to keep doing the same thing over and over and over. And you can do that. You just can't tell me that that's unique and God's put a unique calling on your life, because nothing about your language is unique. And I feel that's I might just be the feed that's coming across all my social media channels. I don't know.
No,
but
you're right.
More of that. There's just more. I perceive that to be, I gotta be honest, I think it's annoying. I don't know if it worries me because I'm not a worrier kind of guy. I'm just more of a giggler that says, I mean, all right, Buckaroo, if you think that's going to work for you, let me know.
So you're telling me that it's possible that churches would have different callings and pastors would have different purposes? That's
wild.
That's
heresy, bro.
Right?
Yeah.
We talk about that all the time. Like, it's amazing that that you have a church like, you know, an Elevation that, you know, look at the resources, look at their drive for online, right. Yeah. and really how that's just shaped their church in a lot of ways, or at least outside looking in, the engagement.
Right.
Then you've got the local church down the street that's barely pushing 100 people. And it's like, oh, yeah, they're also called to be online and do the same thing. Not saying you shouldn't be online, not saying you shouldn't do it, but did you even stop to ask the question, did you even stop to pray and go, am I called to this? Because from a comparison standpoint, you're kind of behind on the race here. So what do you do well, right? So that's really good. That's really good.
Yeah, I've seen like how you leave something's very important, and it says a lot about the blessing that God will have for you in your next thing. If you leave something horribly and you didn't either come under the leadership of where you were at, or you did something divisive in order to create your own thing, it's like jumping out of a boat to go swim to an island that looks like it's right there. And you find yourself in the water and you're like, I should have stayed in the boat. There's comfort there, even though it was going slower than I thought. I think there's something to be said for timing, and also not just, and that's what you have with choice now, right? So many churches that if they do one thing that offends me, I'm just going to jump over to this other church, have a fresh start. And then they don't really know me and my problems, but they will in 3 months because I haven't changed. And so the same thing will keep following me no matter where I go, because I haven't changed myself, even though I want to blame and say it's the church's problems. And we've talked about church hurt, and there's often abuse and things that I'm not trying to dismiss, but I'm also saying that you have to change yourself before you expect change to happen around you. And with that has come, you know, this consumerist mentality. And I like one of your videos, Stephen, that says you cannot build a church with spectators who don't commit. And this is a big difference from what you see in the early church with people who were committed, willing to die. And now you have people you can barely get to more than one Sunday a month. And I'm just curious, like, have we created this to an extent by offering things like live stream and social media, which are not wrong in and of themselves, but what have we done to create this? And what can church leaders or people listening do to kind of change this mentality of I'm just there to consume and not actually support?
No, that's great. So I feel like there's two sides of that. There's the flaky people, which is just called humans. And we all have some version of that depending on what we're chasing or want to be or not be, you know? So there's that side of it. And on some level, I'm like, that's fine. You know, people are going to be flaky, move staff members, crap out and blame somebody for it, call it church hurt. Okay. That stuff happens. What I'm more always frustrated about, because it's the lane I run in, is the church people who not just enable it, but like push that. They don't know they always push it. So to your point about the consumeristic side, I think it starts, for example, I was just on a call literally this morning about with a one campus church about to go multi-site. And it's probably one of the top three things I talk about when it comes to multi-site church planning is the, I'm going to say just correctly what everybody needs to hear, the stupid idea called interest meetings. It's stupid. Because just think about what you just said. I'm going to do this if you're interested. But if you're not interested, I guess we're not doing it. So it's not a mission and vision. It's not a calling. It's a publicity stunt. It's a popularity party. No, Sweb, you know what I mean. No, I don't. Because your language has to be intentional. You're more intentional about language with your kids. Why can't we be the same, you know, use the same intentionality with churches? So I never did interest meetings when I built 11 campuses or instigated with a team, blah, 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 at Elevation. Because I can't build on interest. Like, again, what if they're not interested? What if you only had three people at the interest meeting? Is it like, well, we don't feel like God's really calling us now. It's like he shut the door. And we got the stupid shut the door theology, which is so much crap too. So again, there's timing and nuance and God can shut doors and all that stuff. Fine, but I'm not here to argue all the angles. I'm just saying that's an example of how we say, it's all about your interest, man. I got 50 people committed right now on the team. No, they're not committed. They're interested. Are they tithing? No, but they said they would. Are they serving? No, because we don't have a campus there yet. And they don't want to drive 9 minutes down the street to the other campus where they can learn and shadow. So you see what I'm saying? We perpetuate that is my point. I'll save hours of ranting here. But then the online stuff is the same. I'm a fan of online. I was totally there when we built what is now, I think, the biggest church online platform there is.
100.
And I'm a fan of it. The logic behind it. But it's a real slippery slope when we go, you know what? It's a lot harder to just do a campus. Why don't we just call them pop-ups? That way we just have to buy a few plane tickets. There's no such thing as church discipline, follow through, consistency. Nah, who cares? You know, let's just do this. And then we'll be shocked a year later when that online giving number is down 10%. Purely hypothetical scenario there that I'm not fully aware of in a lot of churches, but let's pretend that's correct. So like, I feel like we start to perpetuate that. That's the part that bugs me. So I'm not blaming online. I'm not blaming your language of interest meeting. I'm just using those examples of how one slight slip or just apathetic or just lazy copy of another church leads to this, you know, thing down the line. And then at the end of the day, what's the death nail is we don't want to fix it. The most offensive question I ever ask any church that makes most people mad, it frustrates them so much. This is where I stood on their grandmother's grave and stomped on it. It was just one of these evil things. You know, I punched their puppy dog in the face. Is when I said this really, really evil question. I said, did it work? Did it work? That whole online thing you did it work? That staff member that you just had, did it work? When you copied those 17 other churches and you paid for all those conferences and you did your pilgrimage to grow this year or whatever, did it work? I'm okay that you did it, but did it work? And then right after that, and y'all have heard it before, maybe you've said it. I've said it back in the day. God has freed me from this. Is we don't answer the question. We go, but listen, man, God gave us a word and he shut the door and we're going to do this other thing because I got a new vision. And so we can just blame and deflect because, you know, we got a word, because we got mercy, because we got grace, because we got a new vision. And all you got to do is say a vision to deflect that, frankly, you suck at the last thing you tried. And that to me is even worse. See that progression is like, hey, it happens. Hey, man, you're perpetuating this thing. Okay, but did it work? Are you going to fix it? And if we get to that point and you still want to say, yeah, but we got a new vision here, but I really feel like we're about to turn a corner, but I really feel the Lord is doing something new in 2024, but I really feel 10 campuses in 10 years, even though the last 30 years, we hadn't broken 500. Like, I mean, come on, man. At some point, yeah. I wish there was some version of accountability Like, I mean, it's kind of like I'm on the fence here, but I wish on some level that we were standardized in a way that we could be like, all right, let's all vote to fire that guy. Let's impeach that guy. bring a new quarterback in, because it's just killing me over here.
Yeah,
well,
for sure.
Well, I spent 24 years in the business world in retail, and there was always a report for everything, even down to the smallest thing. And you could always look at that and measure your success based on quarter after quarter, month after month, day after day. I mean, it was ridiculous how much we tracked. And being in full-time industry now for 3 years, this has brought up the question of how do you know? How do you know that things work when there's so much of a spiritual component to things that can't be, quote, right, measured? And that's what I don't even have an answer for that particularly. How do you know when something does work?
So I think you can track it. I think you can track everything. I've never known a church ever that tracks more than what we did at Elevation. I don't think they do the same anymore. But we tracked a lot too, because business is not evil, nor is it the antithesis of the spiritual world. They go hand in hand. They're just two different muscles. It's right and left arm kind of thing, in my opinion. You know, I'm not freaking out theology here, but so we take different principles. So I do think you could track a lot, measure a lot, push a lot, and see what you're doing. I just think it's hard work. And I think a lot of people get into ministry to stop working. I literally think that it's almost like a retirement vehicle for people, because college professors on the woke East Coast and senior pastors are the only two people in the world that apparently can't get fired for doing stupid things or nothing at all. And it's frustrating. Or I guess you can add Congress to that list now. But like, it's really frustrating, but you can track it. You can say, hey, here are three, and you get to make it up. And that's what's so weird about this whole thing, is you get to at least create the scoreboard. What I'm over here jumping up and down and screaming about is, when you create your scoreboard, just stick to it for a year is all I'm asking. Don't change it and blame it on God or vision or something like that, because you sucked at it, because you didn't want to do the hard work of drilling in. But I would say, I'm with you, you actually can put metrics to all of this stuff. Because at the end of the day, you're trying to connect with people. So there are ways you can connect. And it's more than attendance. But again, we just care about attendance and giving per person, which is a really terrible metric, by the way. We just care about certain things like that. And then we think, oh, that's all you could track. But you can tell if you're doing good. And that's funny, because I bring this up pretty often. Like, I think you can win at church. I think you win the bigger picture of church. I think you can win in certain seasons, different events. You know, we know, but people don't like to say that. But we all know when we're losing at church. We all know when the seats aren't full, or somebody has a moral failure, or there's kind of disunity and frustration with that. We know when it's losing. I'm just saying, why can't we also then win? But like winning in football or anywhere else, it takes effort to clarify and it takes dedication to finish. And those are things that just weren't really on tap in the church world.
I would say, you know, when is it time for fresh vision versus cruising on the vision that has burned out 5 years ago? You know, I saw this after 2020 as our church specifically, you know, it was a year that really caused us to propel into things. And I came on board in 2021, which caused us, I looked at like three phases of what we did. We redid the building, we redid assets, we redid like the sanctuary. And then we focused on processes. We focused on like our internal systems, what we did as far as like pipeline stuff. And then our last step has been focusing on people. We focus on leaders. We focus on the actual discipling and building up of leaders, so that it's not just the same five people doing everything. And that's how I kind of see the last 3 years for our church. And that required fresh vision to not just do what we did 10 years ago. And I think a lot of people get burned out. I love the quote, you know, they get burned out by not what they do, but forgetting why they do it. And so that's what I propose to you, is like, when is it time for fresh vision? And when is it time to just, you know, put the boots on the ground and start to make things happen? Because the vision is still good.
Yeah. And I don't know, and it could just be my ignorance, or I don't know if there is an answer for that that's it's universal.
Sure.
To me, it's just the honest hard work of asking the question. I just don't think people ask what you just asked to themselves. They only ask it about other people. And I think, and let's just pick on the lead pastor. Hey, you're the boss. So I'm going to pick on that title, essentially, is what it is. But although I know that there's a lot of other variables, I'm just saying, for this conversation, let's just pick on that person. But that person has to have that self-awareness to say, like, something's not right. Not wrong. It's just not right. Or it's not dialed in like it. And we can feel it. We all can feel it. But the game changers that people go, hang on a second. Let me ask a hard question. Let me get a coach. I think of like the Tom Brady's and Tiger Woods, people like that. Like, think about the elite of the elite. All opinions aside, just the elite of the elite, measurable, quantifiable elite level people. They're the ones who, as they get better, increase the voices and the coaching. I'm not saying by new numbers. They don't have 35 people, because I feel like you need less people speaking into you. I'm just saying they work even harder towards the coaching, towards the dietitian, or, you know, a lot of people made fun of Tom Brady's physical therapist guy. Yeah, but he outlasted everybody. But that's rare. I just don't find a ton of those in the church world. But it's those people who ask the question that you're asking and then for themselves come up with what that is. I don't know if you're a golfer or not, and I don't, not everybody needs to be a golfer to understand this idea, but Tiger Woods was already like top two, top three ever. And then he changed his swing. Now, you don't have to be a golfer, but let me just tell you, like, that's stupid. That's insane. You don't just like, oh, I'm going to change the length of my driver. No, no, no. He changed his swing. And then he went and basically doubled that career again and all that before 40 or whatever. Like, that's just a different level of hustle that I feel like is probably kind of the spirit of Jesus on a lot of levels, but the rest of the church world doesn't do it. I'm like, but Jesus put in a unique level of hustle. He crossed some lines and did some things that I'm not sure other people did. I think the disciples are a good example of that too. It's like, man, they were this way and they completely, because of revelation, changed to this direction for the better. I mean, and I just don't know, but I do think those are the guys who asked the questions. I think those are the guys that did the hard work of pushing back. And then let me keep going on this, is there's another side of that too, is then there's people like us, the spectators, the commentators, the ESPN guys that are experts on how the Cowboys are going to win every year and then they choke every year. Lord, I'm an equal opportunity hater, by the way. It's like, just because they're my team doesn't mean they can't suck. Anyway, but I'm more the commentators. My point is, but maybe we can also speak in and help and say, hey, listen, maybe you should consider this. Maybe you should push for that. And I feel like there's not enough of those people coming in from a, I don't know, wise, discerning, but also blunt coaching tone and saying, hey, because of the equity I have with you, I'm going to withdraw a little bit of equity right now. And I'm going to punch you in the face a little bit and tell you this. The Bible verse that comes to mind with this, by the way, or not so much the verse, but the story, you know this, is Jesus is walking down the street with the homeboys. Like, I think it's the three. And he says, you know, what's the word on the street? What's who's everybody say I am? And then Peter answers the question correctly. And he's, and Jesus is like, way to go. Okay, so I want you to go through this progression. I'm giving you the SWEB paraphrase version of the Bible right here. I mean, okay, Peterson got to make his own version, so I'm going to make my own version. So so basically he says that, right? That's what he says to Peter. And Peter's like, yeah. I got it right. What? And then in the same breath, in the same conversation, Jesus turns around and says, get behind me, Satan. And go read it. And those are back-to-back interactions right there. And my point is, can you lead like Jesus in a way that you can validate and lift somebody up into a position they haven't otherwise been in, at the same time punch them in the face and say, get behind me, Satan? And that's a rare leader. Pastor Stephen Furtick said this years ago. He said, if you want to lead like Jesus, you have to be willing to make unreasonable requests. And along those same lines, I do think there's a place where, you know, I'm not dishonoring or saying anything about respect or whatever, but beyond the obvious of those, at some point we have to say, listen, man, there's something better in you. I'm going to need you to kind of, you know, pick it up and step it up here. And I don't think a lot of people are doing that either. So I know I said a lot of words right there. I'm just trying to present both sides of the coin. I feel like there's weakness on both sides. And I'm just definitely the guy that's like, I'll throat punch you, but I can take one too. You know what I mean? So right. It's all about equity. Right.
Good.
I threw this one in here just talking about the state of Christians as far as pushing themselves. We talked about pushing churches with the vision and all that, but just Christians listening right now who often get in a state of just rinse and repeat, right? I heard this quote recently from Mark Twain. He said, most men die at 27. We just bury them at 72. And I love that in the spiritual elements of the church life, right? You ask any Christian, they're good and they're blessed, right? They're highly favored. But when you start to get in the nitty gritty of their life, they're broken and hurting and they need their Savior every day, not just on the day of salvation. And so, you know, my question is really just, how have you seen this take place in a church where people act alive, but in reality, they're dead? And what can we do as leaders? How can we be introspective on our daily life where we're, you know, living that spiritual high, not for high's sake, but because we're connected with our source, basically?
Man, I don't know, but when you find that out, let me know.
Right? Yeah. Just fix it all for us right now, please.
Yeah, you got a few minutes, hit it.
So just a couple of blanket thoughts, I guess, that come to mind is, first of all, it's risky. I feel like that's just the thing. More and more, I don't know if it's just Christians. I think everybody's just more and more timid of just being real and and vulnerable with people. Because I think the word vulnerable has a weird connotation. You know, vulnerable means you have to cry. And if you're a man, you got to go to a men's retreat where you smoke cigars and you throw your porn addiction on the stage. I'm like, there's a lot more to vulnerability than that.
Right.
You know, like, settle down, bro. It's like, but you could be 400 pounds, but you're not allowed to do X, Y, and Z sin. And it's like, well, come on. And so that's where vulnerability is now a cuss word. And so I can understand why in that case, there's a whole demographic of people that probably shut down when you hear the words vulnerable, coaching, advisor, go to a counselor, all that kind of stuff. Totally get that. But my point is, it's just, I can understand it's risky that you have to just put yourself out there. Now, I also don't think putting yourself out there is Instagram. I don't think you get to say, yeah, man, I'm just really just coming out here and just like sharing my heart on Instagram. No, that you're an idiot.
I just want to be private.
At some point, just
have a private moment with you real quick.
Let me have a private moment with 1,300 people. It's just, can I just share this with you? That's okay. So, you know, but again, I'm hoping we're talking to grownups in this conversation here where they go, yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. So take a risk. You got a friend you've done ministry with, their life with. It can frankly even be your neighbor. I think there's certain things you do or don't share with the neighbor, but I'm saying, you know, just take a risk, man. Hey, can I just be honest with you? I'm just having a rough day today. I mean, you've seen this before. What do you think about X, Y, and Z? I just don't know that that happens a lot. Now, from the church standpoint, again, just the lanes I run into, the people that I know and the people I'm more coach and consult. So maybe they're a little bit behind the things I've seen. That's why they called me. I feel like maybe it's worse in church. Maybe I think on some level we've probably been taught in Vacation Bible School 1987 to like we're the answer because we say that we know the hope of the world, aka we have all the answers. I don't know if anybody stands up and says that, but I do think that's the connotation that has kind of spun up, and you perpetuate that for a couple of decades, and all of a sudden you can't be wrong at church. I mean, I'm hard pressed right now to think of a lead pastor who's ever stood in, not from the congregation, the pulpit, but just stood in front of a staff and go, you know what, man? Remember when we said we're going to do that? I'm sorry. We shouldn't have done that. We should have done this. The key phrase right there is, I'm sorry. My bad. I got it wrong.
Yeah.
I can't tell you a lead pastor I've worked with in 18 years that said that. Literally.
Wow.
So in the last 18 years that said that. So I'm not saying those people are bad. I'm just saying it's not common for us to see what it's like to wrestle. And then so one other big blanket thought, or not blanket, but just another thought that came to mind. It's kind of silly. It's funny. I should have started with the joke on the front end and back end. But at the end of the day, like G.I. Joe taught me this back in the 80s, 90s when cartoons, it's like knowing is half the battle.
Yeah, just, I remember that.
At least as long as you know that there's something wrong, as long as you know that you're a little bit frustrated, even if you haven't yet determined who to tell it to and who to kind of wrestle with. And again, we're not talking about big epic porn addictions. I'm cheating on my wife stuff. I'm talking about like, dude, I'm just kind of in a funk and end up having a bad week. I think that right there is 90% of problems. And we try to give the minority with the megaphone with the 5%, 3%, whatever of the big epic moral failure stuff. I don't think it's that, which is also maybe why people don't share. Cause they're like, no, I don't really have a big problem. I haven't slept around on anybody. My church is still, you know, still running 1,000 people. I'm doing pretty good. So therefore I must not have a problem. Right. And I just feel like, again, starting with the G.I. Joe, hey, knowing is half the battle, number one. Now take your next step to just have an honest conversation with somebody. And then the third thing, if I'm prescribing, I know I didn't set this up in a prescriptive manner necessarily, but if I was prescribing, I'd say then the third level of that is be okay with not having closure. That's what I do. I have a couple of friends I just met with. And frankly, I do it on voice memo. We don't even always have a phone call. I was on a voice memo chat tomorrow with three other guys saying ridiculous, goofy things, making fun of each other. And on a lot of levels, very healing and therapeutic because you just kind of vent and throw some stuff around. It's kind of fun. But I'm not looking for closure. All right, Sweb, thanks for that voice memo. Now listen, buddy, you need to pray 3 hours a day. Make sure you read Revelation 21:21. It's going to be really great. Remember Jeremiah 29:11, buddy. It's going to all work out. You know, but I think that's what a lot of people think. I'm just saying, encouraging somebody. If one of the person listening to this says, okay, cool, thanks, Sweb, I don't need to have closure. Nah, it's a workout. You're never going to be done. You're never going to be done venting. You're never going to be done processing. You're never going to come to some conclusion that's going to solve all your problems. And I've just decided to accept that on the front end rather than accidentally discover that on the back end. I don't need closure. I'm just going to keep working the process.
Yeah, that's good.
That's really good. I love what you said too about being in a position to lean in and try to draw something out of someone. Mm-hmm. This is way less of a question and more of just like, let me get something off my chest. Like one of the things I've noticed is just generationally, there is a big difference in leaning into someone who's older than me, leaning into someone who's my age, leaning into someone right now in their 20s, leaning into someone that is in middle school. And the nuance of having to be able to understand, you know, again, as you get to know people on a personal level, of course, you learn how to speak to them better and you learn what they value and you share what they value so that, you know, you can, you know, point them in the right direction with trust and validity. Mm-hmm. But there's also such a big challenge in wanting to move people forward, move your church forward, both collectively and in pockets of people. And you're now going, oh man, like this group right here is way less appreciative of those moments when you're trying to really like call a lot out of them. But I think that's where you talked about closure. Like that's where you almost have to have this attitude of like, hey, not everybody's going to like the way that we're doing everything here. Of course, that doesn't mean you don't try. That doesn't mean you don't have empathy. And that doesn't mean you don't put effort into providing that kind of clarity and trust. However, you have a culture at your church. And a lot of times that culture is built off of like who's at the top and it's running down. And, you know, if your personality is, I'm going to lean into you a little bit, then the people you're going to attract are probably going to be more driven. And they are probably going to be more susceptible to being leaned into because they want to get better and they want to progress. So I think that's really important. You know, I see a lot of times you've got these frou-frou vision statements within like this powerful leader. You know, it's like, you guys got to like get this worked out here. You know, not saying that we're doing anything perfectly, but it's like there is a lane that you have to decide you're in and say, okay, this is what I'm called to. I know that we're called to that because I know me and I know where we're headed and I know what it's going to take from me. Therefore, I know what it's going to take from you. And so I just think that that's really interesting. That's really, really helpful for me to hear today, even in the situation like I'm going through the process I'm in, like being okay with being misunderstood. And being okay sometimes with like, hey, you know, we're going to have some turnover, you know, early on, but we're also growing, we're gaining new people and staying focused on that and locked in. And like you said, just being consistent. So that's really good.
Yeah. Really, really good. No, that's great, man. Yeah.
So you have two pastors sitting in front of you. You love making people think. And really, honestly and truly, like, you know, I think you've heard this, personal is powerful. Have you heard that before? For me, just from an encouragement level, like every time I talk to you, it 100% makes me think, but I love the content that you put out because whether I agree with it or not is really irrelevant. Right. And whether you take the approach I would is really irrelevant. Every time you put something out, it makes me just ask myself some questions. Right. And I know that's ultimately what you're trying to get to. And so it's been really helpful for me, and even just the time you've been able to take on the side where you field a phone call or you field a text, it has given me answers and given me courage to really be bold and move forward when sometimes you feel like, because of what you've seen, because of what you've been part of, sometimes you feel like not everybody has that kind of faith or has that kind of belief or wants to run as far and as hard as you want to. And so having you in a corner to be able to go, nah, man, like you got it. Like you just got to do this. Like it's been really reassuring for me. So thank you for that. But as we wrap up, absolutely. Yeah. You've got two pastors sitting in front of you. I'm wondering, like, what's one thing you feel like you could challenge us with, whether, again, we get closure now or not, but something that would allow us to go, yeah, I really need to think about that.
Man, one thing. Who just work?
Hold on. Let me just pull up my.
I rant for a living, right? I rant for a living. Dude, so you're like,
when you launched 101, when you launched that document of 101 things, I was like, "This is going. This there's no stopping this train right now."
It was
amazing, but like, who throws out 101 things?
Did you nail them on the church wall or what? On the church door?
Dang it. I knew somebody would.
That's what you should have done.
That's
it. No, so real quick, this is like, it's crazy. This might be why the list sucks. I don't know. But I came up with the list, designed the document, put it on Instagram in 24 hours. So I was like, let's go. So yeah, sometimes I just got junk rattling around my brain. I'm like, I'd make a good list. Let's just, everybody wants a list, you know?
Sure.
They can get post-it notes and make them together. So I think it's a really good list, by the way. 101 things.
It's a great list, but my printer's out of paper. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, I just...
Hey, I don't know if you've gotten one of these, but I have a phone, bro. And it's got like, you can put PDFs on the phone. It's insane, dude. Technology these days is blowing out of water, man.
I know, dude. I'm so old. I can't figure it out.
It's not 101 pages. Hey, for all you listeners out there, sweb.fy.
It's not. No, it's and listen, they're good. They're really good. I'm just giving them hard.
And it's free. By the way, let me just point out, all my
it is free.
I'm an idiot. I'm ridiculous. I just give stuff away for free. You know, I'm a church guru. I'm supposed to charge $20,000 for lunch. So apparently that's the one, right? Anyway, okay, one thing. I mean, there's a lot of things I'd like to say, but what apparently is on my mind right this second, watching this airplane take off in front of me, is do less. Do less. Like, what's the one thing that you're supposed to do? And just drive at that. I know that you're like, I don't know, there's three things. I know, I'm just telling you. So that maybe you'll at least think about it. You may not get one. Maybe you're doing 100 and you get down to 99, fine.
But me telling you to do less is what I'm looking for. Jesus came for one reason only. And I bet if you asked a lot of people, they'd split right down the middle. They don't know what that thing is. I bet a lot of people would say he came to make disciples. Remember, that's the thing he said in Matthew. You're supposed to do on the way out. They go make disciples and baptize them. I don't know if that's why Jesus came to earth. I think that's a byproduct and a necessary thing that he needed to do along the way, but I'm pretty sure he came for another reason. And so even then he can dial it in. And I just feel like, man, could you find, like, what's the one thing you have to do? And I'm not saying it's one, I'm just saying do less, but man, sure. What if you could get it down to what's that one thing? So do less. And what I mean by that, like specifically give you some examples for church people, you know, you're running 3 meetings and you need to be in 1, you know, you're doing 19 events. You need to do 3. Trunk or Treat never grown a church in the history of the world. I don't care what you say. All of you need to kill Trunk or Treat.
Say it.
And Fall Fest is another word for stupid idea. So let's just be clear on that. You can do youth without doing a back to school bash or a pizza blast. I don't know why churches love fests and blasts. I don't understand it. You can do less. Some of you need to hear the gospel message here that you can have a church without a coffee shop. Drew, you know, we grew a church to 20,000 people faster than any church in American history. Never one time was there a coffee shop in that lobby.
The first thing I did when I got here was get the coffee out. That apparently, made so many people mad, dude.
Apparently, it's not universal that you need coffee to build
coffee. We just lost some listeners, so.
Yeah.
Oh, totally.
Yeah,
no. I'm sorry.
Who would have thought? Yeah.
So I'm just saying, those are silly examples, but they're real examples. They're real examples.
Yeah. Yeah.
That you can do and do less. So whatever that means for you, just on one less thing to do this year, this month, this week, whatever, just do less. You guys are smart. The listeners are smart. They can jump into all the theological answers I probably should have given and the principled answers and the Maxwell answers. And no, I'm sure Carrie Newhoff has a list. All those are great things. Those are all corners. Sure. I'm coming at it from simplicity of like, I promise you, your life gets better today when you do one less obligation in church that you know wasn't assigned from heaven above. It's an obligation that grew on you like residue. And just get rid of whatever that is.
That's
awesome. Well, listen, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. Let everybody know who's listening where they can find you on social media.
Main thing is Instagram, Stephen P. Webb. It's a PHENPWEBB. Swebb.FYI is the website that can help you there too. But I think most everybody that cares is on Instagram for me, at least.
Absolutely. And we'll definitely link that in the show notes and make sure everybody's got that going. Again, thanks so much for joining. And I hope our listeners will check out what you've got going on Instagram. Really good content, always challenging, and always a pleasure to talk to you. Listeners, until next time, go with God, grow in discernment, and keep your eyes on Jesus.
Thanks for joining us on the Eyes on Jesus podcast with Drew and Tim. Don't forget to hit subscribe. If this episode blessed you, please share it with a friend. Check out the show notes for more ways to connect with the hosts of the show.